final edition of On the Power Play. I'm your host, Ben Kerr. With me, as always, is Dave Gove. And Dave, let's get right into it. The Pittsburgh Penguins lead the Nashville Predators 2-0 heading into a pivotal game 3. What's going wrong for Nashville right now?
Well, obviously, I think it starts with Pecorine, who has played pretty poorly throughout the first couple games. Save percentage is, I think, like 770 right now. And obviously, in this kind of situation, your goaltender usually needs to be one of your best players. And you see that time and again with the Conn Smythe winners throughout, you know, Stanley Cup history. So, as far as that goes, I think that if he doesn't improve, then they're going to be in for a lot of problems. From the offense, I think you're really starting to see the loss of Ryan Johansson because they're struggling to put things together offensively. They did come back and score 3 goals in game 1 and tie that up, but I think that that was a game that they dominated. I mean, they didn't allow a shot for like 30 minutes of that game. So when you're putting that much pressure on, things tend to go well. But I think over the course of time, losing your number one centerman is obviously going to play a key role. And I think that aside from that, right now, I think obviously their defense has played pretty well. Aside from, you know, a couple of those soft goals at the end when they were already down in game 2.
Yeah. Dave, I'm going to pull some stats out here, and let's start on Pecorine. This is a guy who, from starting a game, he's got 1 win in relief against the Penguins. He's 1-7-2 in the regular season, now 0-2 in the playoffs. Has never beaten the Pittsburgh Penguins and had an .865 save percentage coming into this series against them. He's in the 760s right now after 2 games, and that's simply not good enough. But it's at an almost historically bad level. But I think when we dig deeper, Dave, into the advanced stats, it gets even worse for Rene. In terms of high danger scoring chances, the Penguins have been limited to just 10 high danger scoring chances in this series, and normally, you know, we don't see the 930 save percentages and things like that against high danger scoring chances. But you see guys all the time making 85% of those saves, up to 90% of those saves. In this series, the Penguins have had 10 high danger scoring chances on net and scored 8 goals.
Yeah, I mean, that's that obviously makes it look even worse. But I mean, even just aside from advanced stats, if you just go with the eye test, it's obvious that Pecorine has not played well. I mean, a couple of the goals he's given up are pretty soft. So
yeah, the first goal to Guentzel in game 2, even the game winner by Guentzel in game 1, it was a short side high, and I know he's given up a few of those short side high. But no traffic and a wrist shot to the glove side, short side. Goalie's got to make that save. You know, most NHL goalies are going to make that save. So that's got to be concerning. Given what we're hearing on the stats, given what we're seeing in the eye test, is there any chance, do you think, that the Peter Laviolette would go to UC Saros in game 3? What do you think about that, Dave, and that option?
Well, I personally wouldn't. I mean, I think it could happen, but you're talking about your franchise goaltender starting your first game at home in franchise history in Stanley Cup final. I don't see it happening, but I think that Pecorine would be on a very short leash because you have to win game 3 pretty much. I mean, obviously, in the last few years, you've seen a couple teams in the Flyers and the Kings come back from 3-0. But that's still extremely rare. It's only happened 4 times in NHL history. If you go down 3-0, you're pretty much done. So I think that I think you start Rene just because he's got you this far. But if he lets in anything soft, you got to pull him pretty quickly. I think that, though, there is a valid case to be made for Soros because he played very well throughout the season. And also, a lot of people credit the fact that he came in and played so often to keep Pecorine sharp, because Pecorine had been overworked the last few years. The fact that you had a goaltender come in and was able to play 20-plus games for you helped to alleviate some of the pressure on Rene, and right now he's played, you know, 15-plus straight games throughout the playoffs and regular season. So I think you could say that it looks like he might need some rest, but I don't really think that Peter Laviolette's going to go in and change goaltenders in Game 3 to start.
Yeah, I don't think he is either. I think he should, though. I really think that UC Saros is the way to go. My reasoning for this is people say, you know, Rene's gotten you this far, and it's absolutely true. He was the leader for the Conn Smythe Trophy prior to this series starting. He was the best goaltender in the playoffs of any team prior to this series starting. He's gotten them where they are, and I agree with that. And making a move and switching your number one goalie, teams, you know, see that as pushing the panic button. And I agree, that is pushing the panic button. But you're down 2-0. This is an absolute must win, and he's not getting the job done. If there ever was a time to push the panic button, it's now. By the time you get to game four, it's too late. This is an absolute must win, and the Predators need to get some type of goaltending. If they have just average NHL goaltending, they easily win game one. And game two, they're in it for a lot longer and potentially have a chance to take the lead in the third period. So that's kind of where I am on that. I don't think it'll happen. I think coaches are conservative by their very nature. But I think conservative is death right now, because it's time, and you've got to win this game. And to me, Nashville's been the better team in this series. They have controlled the play. Game one was quite frankly ridiculous without getting a shot for 37 minutes. Game two, I felt they were the much better team for the first two periods. They kind of fell apart, like you said, after giving up the go-ahead goal for a little bit there, and we're giving up two-on-ones and things against. But the majority of that game, they were the better team. They just they can't seem to finish. And given that they're getting their chances but can't seem to finish, where do you think they need to get more offense out of, Dave? Who are the players you're looking at?
Well, I think first and foremost, obviously, is Mike Fisher, who's had 1 point throughout the entire playoffs. And obviously that point came in game one, and he was hurt, you know, in the Duck series. But when one of your top two, three centermen is not producing and has been somebody that's been on the power play, I think that's, you know, the first place you look. He's your captain as well. He should be leading by example. And I think that he does that in a lot of ways, but he's not producing offensively. And with Ryan Johansson hurt, he's become a guy that can't just be your third line center right now. You need some other guys, you know, to step up. And as a guy who's been in this situation before, the only guy that has Stanley Cup experience on that team, he's a guy to look to first. But I think there are other guys that perhaps, you know, haven't gone and done as enough as they could, like Colin Wilson or Craig Smith. So defensively, not really sure that you can put too much blame on, let's say, a third line pairing or anybody else like that, but their defense has led the playoffs in scoring from the blue line. So I think that right there, let me see. Yeah, what about you?
I agree. I think that's where you really need to look. I know one thing I'll say about Mike Fisher. He had about 42 points, I think, this year or something like that, or in that area. It was between 40 and 45 points. He's not a huge scorer. He did play on their second line. That wasn't the plan for the Predators this season. They did plan to have their second line be anchored by Mike Ribeiro. And obviously that didn't work out. We've talked about it on this show. And we talked about why that didn't work, where Mike Ribeiro is now, how the Predators sent him home for issues he was causing in the locker room. And it didn't work. But it's time for a Mike Fisher to step up if the Predators are going to do anything. I know that Wilson and Smith have had very tough years, but, you know, Bobby Ryan had a very tough year in Ottawa, but Bobby Ryan came out and played a great playoffs, and he almost erased the memories of a bad six-month season with a good 6 weeks in the playoffs. For Colin Wilson and Craig Smith, they are two guys who Nashville will likely leave exposed in the expansion draft and who Nashville wouldn't mind losing, given their contracts and their productions right now. But you can really change the narrative if you're those two players. You can become a legend for this franchise just by having a good 10 days. If you have a good 10 days from games 3 to 7, you could change the franchise. You could become a legend in Nashville and in this franchise's sports history. So that's what I'm looking for. If the Predators are going to get back in this series, they're going to need to get something out of some players who maybe haven't produced for them this year but are needed now due to the injuries to both, obviously, Ryan Johansson, but another big injury that seems to have been forgotten is Kevin Fiala. He's also an important offensive contributor for the Nashville Predators on their second line, and him being out of the lineup really hurts them. I don't know how much more you can ask out of guys who are playing fantastic right now in Colton Sissons and Pontus Aberg. There's just not much more that they can give you. They've given you all they have, and it hasn't been enough in these first two games. So you're going to need to get them to continue what they're doing, and you're going to need to get a little something else from somewhere else in your lineup.
I think Aberg actually has looked a lot better than I think people thought he would. I mean, he came in after Ryan Johansson got hurt pretty much and filled the role there. Actually, when you saw that first goal in game 2, where he just blew by Ole Mata and then scored to open the game up, that was fantastic. And I think that the guys that follow Nashville have said that they've been looking forward to this kid for a while, but I don't think a lot of people knew who he was before maybe the Ducks series. So I think... actually, on that play, and we've seen other plays too, where Ole Mata has just been really slow. I think they need to capitalize on that anytime he's out there. And I don't know if he's going to get less ice time or not, but that defense is already depleted for Pittsburgh. So he's definitely been maybe their weakest spot.
Yeah, he certainly has been the weak link on the Nashville blue line. On the Penguins blue line. I don't think many can argue that, and they are going to need a little bit more out of Mata going forward, because I think if that's a matchup that the Predators will start to really target, and that's something that they should go after. He has not looked good really all playoffs. He scored some goals for them. He's brought some offense, but defensively, he looks slow at the NHL level, and I don't know if that's previous injuries he's never quite recovered from, and he's not 100%. And I think if the Penguins had some other options, if they had some healthy defensemen, he wouldn't be in the lineup right now.
No, I definitely don't think so. Obviously, you know, they've had really high percentage goals going in, but I think the Penguins are probably going to change some stuff up too if Nashville is able to shut them down at home where they have the line change advantage. So it'll be interesting to see what Peter Laviolette does there. I know it's still going to be very difficult. The Penguins are, you know, a tough matchup regardless, especially, you know, when you got to go Malkin and Crosby. But it seems like they've been doing a pretty good job of that away. So I don't know how much better he can do at home. He just needs, you know, like we said, Pecorine to step up and play a little bit better. And they need to get their offense going. Their power play has been pretty pathetic so far.
Yeah, their penalties, their power play has just not been good enough in this series so far. They, especially given how much they tend to rely on it in given, you know, how any team with their level that relies on defense for so much scoring as they do is going to need to rely on their defense to provide scoring, and that means a strong power play as well.
All right. Well, what else do you think about this series going forward?
Well, one thing I think we should talk about in this series is the offside rule. We saw it in Game 1. It was very, very close with Philip Forsberg there at the blue line, and that led to, it took away a PK Subban goal. It seemed to change momentum in the game. The Penguins would score three quick goals after that, and that offside, I think, was an issue. We saw in Game Number 2, the Penguins were flying. They were up 4-1. Patrick Hornqvist scored a goal, and it got, could have made it 5-1. It got called back. It seemed to change the momentum in that it slowed down the Penguins, who were seemingly had gone the last 5 minutes just full throttle and had their best 5-minute segment of the series, and it seemed to kill that. So I'm wondering, Dave, I think, I don't know what you think, but I think both of these were the right call. The way the rule's been written and the way the rule has been enforced all year, I think the refs got it right. But the question I have is this rule becoming like the old foot in the crease rule? Is it becoming a rule where we can't watch goals anymore and enjoy them because we have to wait 5 seconds or wait 30 seconds to see if a coach is going to challenge them, to see if a blade was half a centimeter off the ice or a toe was over the line. I know the league doesn't want to look silly like they did on that Avalanche goal that started this rule change, where I believe it was Matt Duchene was like 4 feet offside. But is this rule and the way they've taken this rule and put it into place, is it too much? And is it creating more problems than it's worth for the league?
You know, I agree with you that both of those calls were the right calls. I don't think that many people, I mean, obviously some fans of Nashville or just that don't like the Penguins will have issues with that Forsberg one. But I think that both were the right call, like you said. And what bothers me the most about this is I think they need to change the rule on offsides, because I think it's really dumb that your skate has to be on the ice when it's a line. It's an arbitrary line, you know, and generally in most sports, when you have a line for something, it's just an imaginary wall infinite high. There's not really any sport where, you know, the ground or the ice matter for a line. And, you know, I can think like rugby, if you're trying to score a try, you gotta touch the ball to the ground. But I just don't get why you need to have your skate on the ice. It makes no difference as far as where you are positionally. And I think, if anything, I just want to see that change, because I think it's pretty arbitrary. And it's never even really been an issue until this review stuff happened. So if you change that, I think that, you know, you keep the integrity of the offside rule, but it just makes more logical sense.
Yeah, you'd greatly reduce the number of challenges if you allowed, if it wasn't measuring if a skate was in the air or not. Because that seems to be the majority of the challenges. They don't. It's rare that the puck is in across the line ahead of the player. And I know that was the Hornquist goal. The puck or the player was completely over the line before the puck came in the zone. But I think that that's rare. I think most of what we've seen in these challenges have been, let's get the camera that's installed right on the blue line. Let's take a look if his skate is on the ice or off the ice. And it's become really ticky-tack to me. It's a lot like the toe and the crease rule. And imagine if one of these games goes to overtime and we have, you know, the team celebrating an OT winner and all of a sudden a coach's challenge and it gets called back. Like, it's going to be a logistical nightmare for the NHL. And I think it could make them really look bad. I mean, they don't want to look silly getting their refs getting calls wrong, like the Duchesne thing. But this is starting to look silly as well. And I think that something needs to be done. Your suggestion, I think, is great. I think it could really reduce the numbers here. And I think it's one of the most logical ones I've heard for still, you know, making sure that people aren't egregiously offside and making sure we get calls right, but not doing something that really hurts the game and hurts the league in terms of bad calls. People, you know, the next day saying, oh, that game-winning goal shouldn't have counted because he was offside. You know, there's always a method to fix that and make sure we still get things right.
Well, the league has said already that they're happy with the way the offside challenges have been going. I think that from their standpoint, this is true. It seems to be working, and they seem to be making the right calls. That's fine. I still don't think for the fans, or just the general nature of the game, that it's fun to watch. And it's definitely not something where I think you need to overanalyze something to that extent. And in other sports, I mean, like, even in baseball where you have challenges, like, they'll challenge, you know, a throw to where somebody's being safe on a plate or something, but they keep the integrity of the balls and the strikes. You can't really challenge that too much. So there are certain things where your umpires or your officials should just be in the nature of the game and let them play it and not have to worry about something if somebody's, you know, skate is an inch high. It just seems so dumb to me.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is it kills the flow of the game. Like I said, you can't celebrate a goal until you know that the ref's not challenging. You can't you get these. They can work as a timeout for a team in that a timeout's 30 seconds. Well, these reviews, if you get them wrong, you lose a timeout. And they take way longer than 30 seconds, let me tell you. So they can be used strategically to get a team a little bit of extra rest that maybe the rule book isn't necessarily calling for. There's a number of ways that these can be abused, and it takes away from those big breaks take away from the enjoyment of the fans watching the game, and it takes away from the flow of the hockey game. So that's why I think it needs to change.
Well, I don't think it's going to change anytime during these playoffs. So until then, we live with it as it is. But, well, you know, like you mentioned about the foot in the crease thing, we didn't see that change until an overtime game in a Stanley Cup final that got decided with Brett Hull beating, you know, Dominik Hasek with his foot in the crease. And that, you know, it ended the Stanley Cup final. And they just never reviewed it. And if something happens during these finals where, you know, somebody's offside, they score something in overtime, which is totally possible because we had so many overtime games, then they go back and review it. I mean, that's just going to look so bad on national television. You know, you're highlighting your sport. More people watch Stanley Cup final than any other time of the year for hockey, pretty much, except, you know, maybe the Winter Classic. If something like this keeps happening, it just doesn't look good for the NHL.
Yeah, I agree, Dave. Well, that's our Stanley Cup portion of the show. We've got some other things to talk about. The Memorial Cup, the Calder Cup playoffs, the Las Vegas expansion draft rules, and some other topics that we'll get into. And we'll do that right after this break. So we're just going to take a quick break, and we'll be back.